Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show for you tonight. And my guest tonight is Rob Timmons, and he makes some, he's the owner and founder of Arcane Pickups. And he makes specialty pickups for you, and we're going to talk a little bit how much detail goes into making a pickup. And hold on a second. There we go. It's a little better. And also with me, who is I want to thank right now for introducing me to you, is Gary Rudenko, my good friend from the Amp Shop Bass Exchange. I'm wearing my shirt today. And I just want to mention real quick, the Amp Shop sells the pickups, and if you mention that you listen to this show about Arcane Pickups and you listen to it on a Jeff Floro All About Guitar, there's a substantial discount that you'll get on the pickups. So thank you, Gary, for that. But anyway, these are interesting pickups. He's made a lot of pickups, and we'll go through this in a second, for a lot of manufacturers. And what's interesting to me, what's intriguing to me, is the how he's nailed different eras of pickups. So welcome to the show, first of all. And what I want to ask you first is give us a little background in the formation of the company and how you got into this and where you are at now. So you kind of define the company.
Okay. Originally, I went to guitar building school, the Roberto Venn School at Luthierry, and I then worked for a lot of different guitar companies around LA, in the custom shop all the way and up to running import businesses for guitars. And at a certain point, I decided I wanted to start my own company, just manufacturing pickups, just a single component. And then from there, I kind of concentrated originally on OEM stuff for small guitar manufacturers. And then I developed a vintage line of vintage recreation pickups, and I also do signature models for some artists, and there's also just a lot of off the books pickups as well that are that I make on.
Well, what did you see at the time when you were just out there? I mean, were you motivated? Was there a lack of something in pickups, or was it just general, you were just searching for that golden tone?
Really, it started with I was working at this one import company, and they were very interested in Tom Holmes pickups, and I knew him, and they asked me to try to make a deal with him for pickups, but they wanted far more pickups than he could supply, so they were going to make a Tom Holmes Japan line, which they agreed to do with him. So I did a lot of research and stuff with that with him to make the specs of it, and they were going to make them in Japan to his specs. They started doing that, but he could never supply his own line. It was too limited production for what they wanted. They wanted thousands of pickups. and it just kind of got me back interested in doing pickups and stuff. I'd originally wound my first pickup when I was at the guitar building school.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd always had it in the back of my mind to do that, you know, while I was doing, you know, working in custom shops and building guitars. And then I decided to start my own company. And I saw that there was a need for, particularly in the OEM stuff, for small guitar manufacturers, like specialized pickups built for their instruments that were special. And that stuff was where I would do like engravings on the bottom of the pickups. You would say Arcane Ink, and then say, for example, like James Trussart, and then a serial number starting at one. Mm-hmm. And we'd count up, and we did like different types of humbuckers, Strat pickups, Tele pickups, and I wanted to do something that would add value to the instruments. You know, so they were particularly made for his guitars, because they were very, very nice custom guitars. He didn't want something off the shelf. So I figured we could do something where the patinas matched and it was dialed into his tone requirements and the look. So it would really, you know, make his guitars like complete throughout with patinas that matched the finish of the guitar.
And so you're saying that you would build pickups for the specific guitar. So what did you encounter? How do you build a custom pickup for a certain guitar? Is there a difference? For example, I know the materials in a Trussart guitar are different than like a knockoff of a Tele or something like that. So what do you do? I mean, I'm just trying to get in your head a little bit. What's the difference, or how would you make, or when you made for a Trussart, did you encounter? How did you come up with the optimum pickup, if that's...
Yeah. Well, in his case, his guitars are, a lot of them have metal bodies with wood necks. And so they were still very vintage inspired stuff. He wanted humbuckers, Strat and Tele. And a lot of the basic platform of them is like a PAF humbucker, 50s Gibson humbucker, or a 50s or 60s Strat or Tele pickup. And then we just kind of tuned them to his instruments. They're still very vintage. The tones are very vintage, but he would like stuff, you know, maybe like Alnico 3 on Tele pickups for the bridge. And there was some different requirements of like the finishing, you know, where the patinas, his guitars are, instead of looking like a relic where it's like 50 years old, it looks like it's 500 years old.
Yeah.
So we would make these patinas that were beyond just aging. And, you know, we just tried to make something that would really add value to the instrument. Because his guitars are they're really custom, and they're probably in the $5,000 to $8,000 or $9,000 range, depending on the specs. So you'd want to make something that was worthy of the instrument,
mm-hmm.
and so that's where I saw the need for it. And from there, it kind of branched out into a lot of other builders as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a little bit about the, because, like, for example, I was looking on the website. For the Strat, you have a 54 prototype, a 54 experience that you call the 61, 69, 74. For the Tele, you have the 50, 51, 55, 56, 65, 68, and 72. And then you have 53 P90s, 57 P90s, and some custom ones. P-Bass 57, 65, which I think is on there, on the bass we have here. And the Jazz Bass is 60, 65. So what are the differences? I know that we were talking before the show, Gary and I, some of it's the materials, but what else? Can you explain that? Because that's pretty specific years.
Well, a lot of those, they follow, that's my vintage line, and they follow different changes over the years of pickups. You know, like like Fender, there were different specs that changed throughout the year. Like, you know, like 51, Alnico 3. By 56, they were going to Alnico 5. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in later 60s, and you start getting gray fiberboard in there, you get, there's general specs that are known. In the 50s, for Fender and Gibson, the specs varied a lot. You know, they had winding machines, but they were just filling bobbins. So one might be, you know, 7K, another one might be 9.8K, you know, and
they didn't measure it, they just wound it.
They varied a lot. I'm sure, I guess, you know, it seems like they were filling bobbins. They weren't necessarily making like a bridge pickup, a neck pickup. They were, you know, like for humbuckers in particular, they were just making bobbins, and sometimes the coils would be matched, mismatched. So stuff like that, there's certain specs that were known, like types of Alnico, you know, Alnico 3, Alnico 5. And there's certain basic parameters we'd have like that, but then we'd develop a model that like, okay, this is a good, you know, if I have a good example of, say, like a 56 Tele, that this is a really good sounding one. We'd measure the specs and then listen to it and then recreate that one. And it's like, okay, this is going to be the spec for this. You know, it can, I still have models that are maybe related, that are off the books, that if somebody wants something a little brighter, a little darker, but we sort of have baseline models that are like that. And there's thousands of combinations you could have in between, you know, when you have the specs that vary that much. So
it changed that much, even in the 60s. I mean, like these...
The 60s started getting more regular, more accurate. Because by then, you know, Fender seemed like they were getting more accurate machines. And then they started getting into stuff. It seems like it was a cost engineering of stuff where you can have accurate counters. And they started like, well, you know, this is a Strat pickup. It sounds okay with 8,500 turns. If we do it 8,000 turns, sounds good. You know, they're playing probably just through clean amp sound. It sounds fine. You know, so they start like, oh, we can get an extra maybe 10 or 15 coils out of a spool of wire. You know, and it seemed like that's what's happening. You know, that's my theory at least. It could be, you know, that they just had more accurate winders and they were just doing them less, but they tended to have lower numbers of turns as the 60s wore on.
Well, we know that the windings, how many windings affects a lot, the power, the output, and the tone. But like the bobbin and some of the other things, with if it's dipped and all that stuff, does that all affect it too?
Yeah. There's you can hear differences in, say, wax potting as opposed to lacquer dipped pickups or even unpotted pickups, for sure. And, you know, then there's like degrees of potting too, where, you know, like in wax, you could just dip it in wax for a short period of time, or there's people that vacuum pot to suck the wax all the way to the core of the pickup, you know, for extreme feedback resistance. But it affects the tone, you know, and then unpotted pickups too have a sound of their own. But if you try to play an unpotted pickup in front of a half stack with some kind of gain, you're going to have generally feedback issues if you're getting right up on the amp. But if you do it through a combo, there's a resonance interaction that's really a lot of guys like. But that's tends to be more selective stuff. You gotta kind of ask for that, because if you send out a bunch of unpotted pickups, you're gonna probably have people that are gonna have feedback issues because you don't know where they're gonna end up.
Right. So yeah, especially at high volume now.
Yeah. So generally we pot stuff unless requested, and so I'll cater to that as well.
Now let me ask you this: like the PAF humbuckers. Later on, when like DiMarzio came out and they were doing the super distortions and stuff, we noticed that the PAFs had less output but more tone. And a lot of the early 60s basses don't have the output as much. But now with newer pickups, I'm seeing people getting good tone at higher output. Are you finding that with your pickups? Do they have more output than the originals but still have the tone? And how do you do that?
Well, generally that stuff, you know, I guess there's two aspects to a pickup. There's the magnet and the magnet strength, and then there's the coils, you know, like the DC resistance. And stuff can go from, generally the vintage stuff for, say, humbuckers is like 10K and below, you know, and to get up to 16K, you know, like for the really higher output pickups, as they say, the high DC resistance ones are, you have to use finer gauge wire and more turns. And those tend to get darker and more compressed. They tend to, you know, not clean up as well. Whereas like stuff that's 10K and below, the vintage line, you can like roll off your volume and it cleans up. The overwound stuff, it tends to not do that. But it's very focused, and you know, there's applications for that. But those high DC resistance pickups also split well as well. Because when you split them, they're like 8K, you know, which is in the lines of like a Strat DC resistance, but it's a different magnet structure, so it's never going to sound exactly like a Strat.
Right. So but now, do you find that the output, like what your pickup that you would say that you modeled from a 57 P bass or something, is the output hotter than the original P bass? Or pretty close.
It's, we can replicate them exactly. Like if I have an example, like Gary had a 60s P bass that he brought in, and we can measure it. We can measure the DC resistance, and we know that at that point they were using Alnico 5, and we can measure each coil and know. And then, you know, basically what we have to do then is like, okay, these are the specs, but then we have to listen to it. You know, you can just copy DC resistance and like we know how many turns that's going to be, but we had to do a lot of stuff where we actually listened to it, like, oh, those are the right specs, but, you know, it sounds kind of bright or it sounds kind of dark, and we can kind of adjust them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, generally, if it's too dark, we'll take off some turns and it can brighten up some. Lower DC resistance usually is brighter. Higher DC resistance, more dark, more compressed. So, I don't know, we have the specs that we'd like look at for that one, but then in the case of that one we were cloning, we went back a few times where we had people listen to it, you know, and compare it with the bass.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, you know, it's sort of a guide, the specs, but then your ears are the real guide to, like, okay, that's the tone, you know. And those ones we also dipped in lacquer as well. So
is that better, or how much is that?
It's different. Compared to wax, you know, like the wax, it's like paraffin and beeswax a lot of time, and it kind of penetrates deeper than, say, the lacquer, which is more like a hard shell around the outside, mm-hmm. of the pickup. So to me, the lacquer can have more of a resonance, you know, depending on...
Is lacquer used more now, or is it still wax?
Mostly it's wax. But lacquer was there was in the 60s and stuff, Fender was doing some lacquer and stuff like that.
Oh, really?
So yeah. Yeah, and they have like kind of a look to them. Like a lot of those with the gray fiberboard ones, and there's this amber lacquer coat to them. And so a lot of times it's too, we'll do the same exact specs. We'll hand wind it. We'll do the, you know, dipped in lacquer, same color fiberboard, make it look exactly like it, do the same process.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, there's some debate about hand winding to machine winding, but any of the Fender stuff we do hand wound, because there's some people that say that they don't hear a difference, and there's other people that say they do, you know, and I'm okay with either one, whichever way you think that you're, if you hear it or you don't, but we just do it that way. We do it by hand, which takes more time, but we might.
So you hand wind all of yours?
All the Fender stuff, yeah. The Fender style pickups.
Strats, the humbuckers?
Humbuckers, no. I have a vintage mechanical machine for those. But okay. Humbuckers were never hand wound. You know, Gibson always had mechanical machines all the way back. You know, I even have like CNC machines too that we use occasionally, but most people want stuff that's either the vintage mechanical machines or the hand wound, mm-hmm. stuff. And we just do it that way. You can make stuff a lot quicker with a CNC machine, but seems like people, you know, I guess it's an honest way to do it. It takes more time when we do it that way, you know. We could crank them out a lot faster without doing it that way, but...
Yeah, that's why I think people misunderstand sometimes the cost of some of the pickups. When you hand wind it, it's more precise, but it's labor intensive, so...
Yeah, it takes more time.
Yeah, it takes a little
more. You gotta do one at a time, and instead of stacking a bunch of bobbins and, you know, five or six coils at a time, but I can appreciate, you know, mechanical machines and CNC machines as well. But the Fender stuff, we just do it all that way, just because it's
mm-hmm.
it's the way it was done. So
yeah, so you basically emulate what was done originally.
Yeah.
Now you mention a few of the manufacturers. I know you just mentioned Trussart guitars, mm-hmm. but some of the other guitar companies that you make pickups for?
I do stuff for Echo Park guitars, McSwain guitars, Cole guitars, Scala guitars, Luxtone guitars, Asher, Danocaster, Thorn guitars, and...
LSL.
LSL. I do stuff for them as well. Yeah, a lot of other like small manufacturers and stuff, and a lot of those ones will have like you know, like custom specs built for their
mm-hmm.
instruments.
So they'll tell you exactly what they want, and you pretty much just
generally we'll start with like some of my standard models, and then try these out, and then tell me what you like or don't like. And some of them just take the standard models, and we'll do like engraving for them, or we'll. Do like, oh, I'd like this to be a little bit brighter, a little darker, a little hotter, different types of things, you know, Alnico 8 maybe instead of Alnico 5, and we'll kind of tune them to the instruments, and they'll have a spec that we'll keep, and then they'll just order pickups of that spec, and then they can, some of them even sell the pickups aftermarket.
Right, yeah. And you do make signature type
Yeah, I do like, signature for some artists. Phil X, we do. I was doing the George Lynch signature model, which that one's been discontinued now. But occasionally George still orders some for his Mr. Scary guitars. And so.
Mm-hmm. And now, I want to talk real quick before we start trying some of the pickups out. The unofficial Michael Landau pickup, I want to tell the story of that. But I want to ask you a little bit of what the characteristics of that pickup, because I'm a big fan of his and his sound. So I'll let you go ahead and explain that.
That one, it's a PAF platform, but it was basically around 9.8K, and it was basically an overwound PAF. Still in the vintage range. And the way that that came about, it was sort of a backdoor way. It's not an official signature pickup, but mm-hmm. people just know about it. And to me, it's just specs. All these pickups are just specs. I was doing consulting for Jim Tyler of Tyler Guitars.
Mm-hmm.
And he hired me to set up his winding machines. And for a while, probably for a year, I was winding a lot of the pickups at my shop, but to his specs using his machine. And before we took it over to his place and showed his employees how to use the machine and stuff. And at one point, he gave me a spec that, or a pickup to clone that was a Mike Landau specced humbucker that he had. And I measured it all out. You know, we got really detailed on the specs of it. And then, I gave him all the information. And at that time, I was also working for a company from Finland, and one of my friends from Finland had asked me about, like, that pickup, you know, like the Landau, and I knew he was a really big fanatic, and he ended up telling one of his friends, and his friend started asking for that pickup. And I was like, well, you know, I'll just make you the specs of this pickup. I made him the pickup to that spec, and he made a video that it was like a Mike Landau signature pickup, and, you know, put it on YouTube. And I didn't even know he did this, and it kind of took off from there, you know. And I saw him, I was like, whoa, you know, it's not any official signature thing, it's just the specs. And, you know, from there, I'm not trying to trade off his name or anything, make the pickup to that spec. And it just kind of, people just started seeing that and ordering it, you know. It's, you know, I just call it the lost spec humbucker. It's, you know, it's, it's, that's all it is. And,
So what did the overwounding do to the PAF sound?
That one is kind of like a beefed up PAF. Basically, it's sort of like the maximum amount of wire that you can get on the PAF bobbins without using the finer gauge wire. So it's just a good beefed up PAF. It's a good, nice sounding pickup. You know, it's hot, but not too hot. You know,
Just gives them enough gain to push the pedals, because he uses a lot of effects. But the that's a bridge pickup, right?
Bridge, yes, just a bridge humbucker.
That's on a Strat, if I'm correct, right?
It could be. I mean, this stuff all came from the Jim Tyler spec stuff.
Because I know he used a Strat, but I'm trying to remember if he used a humbucker with two single coils on his guitar.
I think he did some of that stuff. I mean, you know, back I guess in the 80s and 90s, he was playing a bunch of Tyler guitars, and I know they had like a, you know, there was like a sort of like a signature model that they were doing and stuff. So it was related to that stuff from that time.
And that was in the 80s?
80s and 90s was when he was doing a lot of the Tyler stuff. And like I said,
so that must have been when he was doing a lot of the stuff for Joni. Because he's getting some great tone out of there.
Yeah, well, you'd usually see him, he'd have Fender guitars, but then he also had the Tyler guitars. There were some really interesting, exotic instruments that Jim was making for him, you know? And there seems to be a lot of people that are interested in those particular instruments.
Well, his tone is, you know, I mean, as a guitar player, it's like, you know. But okay, all right, let's go ahead and take a look at some of the pickups here. We have, I'll let Gary explain what's on this P bass, and I want to talk a little bit about the interaction between you guys, because you were looking for a specific thing on this bass, and so they get an idea of how custom you go. So I think it's interesting, the story, like you were saying, and some of the other things that you did, you go back and forth with the manufacturer, and this kind of interaction was happening. So I'll let Gary explain what's on here right now.
Yeah, these are pretty much like a reproduction of our real 65 Fender P bass L series, which is like a before CBS, and that bass had very unique tone and sound, like really in that vintage spec. And we decided with Rob reproduce, and simply got the spec, got everything in there, put it on the bass, starting to play, and it's not the same. Of course, it was totally different. Even if we did the vintage correct spec, we never got the right sound. So we're starting to define final tweaking, final tune, like a play with that, did several type of prototypes, put it on a different basses, and finally I think we got the sound when it was really close to original one, sound wise, without that, you know, really high pitch top, like I like people saying hi-fi. At the same time, it has enough bottom and like a really good articulation and clarity. So yeah, that's what
it's really clear. Now, the is that an alder body or ash?
That's an alder.
Alder body, maple neck,
maple
rosewood.
Neck, rosewood, yeah.
Now, before we play it, let's go back to you. So he just explained where he was coming from. Mm-hmm. So what did you discover? Okay, you went to the spec. You matched the spec of the pickup, but it didn't sound what he wanted. So what did you discover?
Well, he had a really nice P bass. It sounded really great. And, you know, then he brought it to my shop. We measured the specs on it. You know, we can have really good accurate meters and stuff. And then we know that those are Alnico 5. And, you know, we made a clone of it, you know, also dipped in lacquer, and then to the same specs. And then we, you know, it's like, okay, these are the specs. You know, we try it, take a listen to it, and didn't sound right. You know, I know we can always modify the specs to, you know, it's just a matter of changing them. And then it was like, okay, it was a little too bright. So we made, it's like, okay, we'll add some more winds, some extra turns to the coils, and made another one. It still wasn't quite right. I think we did like four versions of that one.
At least.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, though, a lot of people, you know, you could just take a spec like that, measure it, and then, because he was comparing it head-to-head with the original bass, and you can make stuff of a spec and then just think you're done, but a lot of times you're not. You got to really, like, listen to it, have really good
face
guys
to face
to it. Yeah, you know, he's got a lot of great bass players that can
a
go
lot of
in there.
A lot of players who try them, they were okay with that, even with the first version. People went, wow, that's a real deal. But because we had the comparison point, you know, we just, like, it did like a real test, this to this, we were not like really happy with that. So that's why we did.
So the question was a lot of the amount of windings to get it to sound right? Or was there anything else you had to do?
In that case, we'd already matched the other stuff. We did the same type of fiberboard, same type of magnets, dipped in lacquer, same type of lead wire, you know. So all those specs were right, and also it was hand wound. But then, you know, we basically had to increase the number of turns, and then, you know, modify it some, and until we got it, you know, right to the ear test. At the end of the day, is the ultimate test, because it doesn't matter, you know, like number of turns, but once you have the spec that you know, okay, this is the ear test, and then we made a few of them and they sounded consistent, then it's like, okay, that's the spec we're going to make it to.
Yeah.
Some stuff, you know, it could be, you know, there's things that you know, we use the same type of wire coating on the magnet wire, but who knows, for whatever reason, you know, maybe somehow copper is a little bit different, you know, today than it was then. That's possible.
That's a fact, yeah.
You know, it's possible. But it really doesn't matter at the end of the day. It's like, if your ears tell you that, you know, from multiple sources that it sounds right, then that's the
spec. Another point is, it's a wood different. This is not the old wood, so this wood doesn't have the overtone like an old P bass. So what we're trying to recreate sound from the newest made bass, mm-hmm, up to there with the old wood, because wood gives you a different resonance. So it's
also too, the I've noticed too on some of my electronics, the pots were, when they made the volume and the tone controls, they weren't accurate. I mean, they were all over the place. The ohmage was everywhere.
Right. And that's another point, because I'm trying to select the pots and I'm starting to do them, and 250K, then not 250K, then could be from 210 up to 290. And that's another stuff, how bright your guitar sounds.
Are you able to measure the pots on the original?
Did we measure the pots?
Because, I mean, that's another thing. If it's like 175K.
No, we did measure in the second, let's say, to 50 pad, but
yeah, I don't think it was anything.
More than 50 pad does not give you that sound. You need to use the low value. So when we did it there and dialed down, I choose basically around 210 to 15.
Could you get a 210, 250?
Yeah,
that's a thing.
You need to measure like we bought like 100 different parts, and then basically I measure every single one, mark them, and put them aside so they will on that base. So.
Yeah, but a lot of times, you know, we got to go to kind of the standard of like, you know, a lot of these pickups that we're going to be making are going to be going into like probably newer bases and stuff.
Right.
So if we have like a 250K pot, you know, and then those specs that we have for that pickup, and we can put it into a new bass and it sounds right, then we're, you know, we're kind of there.
Right.
But yeah, I think, you know, it probably like four tries or so, and then it was repeatable, so we could make it repeatable. And yeah, that was it. But I don't think those pots in the original bass were that far off.
No, original, they were more accurate right now. Right now, they're far off, you know. It's like you cannot find them.
But I remember that a lot of the older stuff, especially in the 50s, those, like, for example, the Vox Wawa, that pot is critical. And there, it's really hard to get, like, for like a Vox Wawa to get the right. If it's a little off, the tone changes radically. Yeah. And that's another thing, too, the cap that they use for the tone control.
Yeah,
They fluctuate a lot too, so it's a little more complicated, I think, than people realize. But let's go ahead and play the bass a little bit so you can hear it. Play a couple of tenths and chords just to. It's got a nice, it's clear, and you can hear, play another chord type of thing. You can hear the inner voices, so the pickups are very clean. They're not muddying up. And then go ahead and try that roll off the play up on the top. This is very cool. Really consistent on the all over the fretboard. I'm not hearing any dead notes.
But you see, the bass retained that woodiness, like almost like a breath from the upright bass. So you have those overtones, which modern bass doesn't give you. Modern bass too bright, too.
Yeah, that's the classic P bass sound right there.
You almost feel like a wood breath. You know, you can feel the resonance. I think Rob did a good job, and he nailed it down to almost close.
Yeah,
like
we don't have the original bass here, but I know Gary, as a bass player, his ear is incredibly sharp, so I trust him. If it matches the original one, it matches the original one.
It's very close, very close.
Sounds good.
So that's very interesting. Now, this is a custom? Is this made just for the bass exchange, or is this your 65 experience?
That one's made particularly just for the bass exchange. We copied his bass, and I had a standard spec like 65 P bass. This one's a bit different, you know.
Okay.
And that's actually what's interesting about, like, if you have a really great example of a vintage instrument, you know, we measure it, it's something different, which his was. That's even better because then it's you know, there's different specs that you could have. There's brighter tones, darker tones. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are kind of individual, you know, and you know, somebody might have their favorite bass and it might be a unique spec.
Yeah.
That happens a lot because their manufacturing a lot of times varied back then.
Now, Gary, this is made specifically for you guys at the Bass Exchange. Have you put this pickup on other basses?
We did three prototypes of the basses. We put on all three.
They were P bass, regular
P bass. They were P basses. We did with a flat wound, with round wound. And right now, Rob finished us some kind of production which is available for sale. We sell them individual if you want to do that, or like install in different basses.
Right.
And I believe a couple of more coming on, very interesting new one. We're just making right now short scale P bass. They go in there as well.
They go in there too. So they, and these are all the basses that you made them into, they're all alder maple with rosewood?
Correct. Or same spec, like a 65.
Have you tried, like, how does it sound like with a swamp ash body and a maple?
We didn't try with that. Okay. We're trying to get something like it, which is very, very similar spec to 65.
So you're going for a very specific thing?
Right, right.
And you haven't tried them on any other type of basses?
No.
I'm curious how it will sound on other, but I'm more than less, if it's like a vintage P bass, I would say that if that sound, it should sound pretty consistent, but it'd be interesting for the guy that's going to buy the pickups and put it on another bass.
Of course, he'll hear totally different sound and will be way more pleased in the way of vintage his
right.
Newest bass.
So this might be a little more of a mellower with a little more output. That's what I'm reading from what you did, because you had more wine. So it's not as bright as some other pickups, but it gets that more wooden sound, like you're saying.
At the same time, it's not loose in the bass, the mm-hmm. deep, muddy sound. You still have that clarity.
Yeah.
And you have those low mids, they're still in there. Plus, it has very interesting overtones. Like, you can always feel like a wood type of, top deck, like almost from the upright sound.
Yeah. It has a very... It does get that type, which was the reason the P bass was out, was to get that
yes.
that upright sound. And I just want to mention real quick what we're using in the signal chain here that Doug's playing. That's Doug Moore on bass. This is a Miura DI and preamp box. We had Miura on a few months ago, and basically we have it set it up flat. It's pretty flat, and it's going direct into the board. So you're hearing pretty much the pickups as it.
Yeah.
I'm not altering the tone or anything with the preamp. It's pretty straight on. So now, besides the pickups that you you make, can people call you directly, and or do they go through the Bass Exchange to if they want a custom pickup? Is that done?
You can do either. You can order stuff through Gary, or you can call me and order stuff. I have a lot of models that are sort of off the books ones, because I try to limit it on my website, because I already have a lot of different versions up there. But there's even more than that. But I try to put the basics up there so we don't confuse people. But there's a lot of stuff that I also make that's, either custom spec or just models that I've made that somehow the word's gotten out there and guys repeatedly order them and their friends order them, or people they know order them.
So I mentioned a little bit of some of the Stratantele pickups in the each year that he has up listed on there. But I'm going to go real quick and have you just explain nutshell. You have P90s, a 5357. Then you have a Philex Signature PX90. Mm-hmm. And then you have a PX100. What's the difference? Is it more output?
The PX90 is a P90, and it's an overwound. It's like 12.5K P90. And the PX100 is a humbucker-sized version of that. So you could put it into a Strat or Les Paul if they have a humbucker route in there instead of a P90 mm-hmm. soap bar.
And what about the P90H?
That is a humbucker. That's one of my standard models, humbucker size P90.
Okay. So that's a humbucker size. And then let's go through the humbuckers. You have a triple clone?
Yes.
What's that?
That is a PAF. It's a Alnico 5 PAF, and it was a clone of... one friend of mine, he had a really good collection of vintage instruments, and he had a lot of stuff. And we were talking one day, and I was like, okay, well, what is your best sounding humbucker, that's in your whole collection? And he had a 1960 335 with a PAF in the bridge. And we basically, I took the specs of it and again made like a sample, and it wasn't quite right. And by the third sample, he was like, yeah, this is, he knew the guitar really well. And he goes, that's the tone. And then that model sort of became popular from there. So it's a slightly overwound PAF type of humbucker. And, vintage spec, made on the 50s Gibson style platform of a humbucker.
Okay. And then you have your 57 Experience, the Bulldozer.
Oh, that is that's my overwound humbucker. That gets in the 16K range. And those ones it's a finer gauge wire, a lot more turns to get up to 16K. But a lot of times when you get a pickup in the 16K range, they tend to be, they can be too dark or compressed, but I did some stuff to make that that one brighter and more clear.
But so it's got a lot of output, but it's bright.
Yeah, it's still got a clarity to it.
Okay. And then the Brown Bucker.
That is, if you get into the mythology of the Van Halen tones, there's a whole realm of Van Halen tones and a mythology that goes with that. And I'm particularly interested, like a lot of people, in the 1984 and before guitar
tones. The first album?
The first few albums, you know, that's the tones that that I'm interested in, a lot of other people. And his, there was a whole mythology from that stuff where he had a humbucker and it was a PAF and it had really mismatched coils and it was somehow damaged. And, you know, the same type of thing where we'd make, you know, okay, so we'd have a theory of like, well, what could this pickup be? And then you'd take it and take those specs and listen to records and stuff and see and make a spec like that. And so basically it's a really mismatched coil humbucker. So it's still in the PAF range, but it's got a clarity to it. And you know, that's also a pretty popular pickup, what I do. It's got a different flavor in there.
Mm-hmm. And then you have the broad range.
Oh, that is like the early 70s wide range humbuckers with the... you know, they were the larger format humbuckers that were designed by Seth Lover for Fender after he left Gibson, and they were interesting. They were a unique spec. They have threaded magnets and unique coils. And back in the day, they were Kunife magnets, which were unique. And I know it seems to me that whenever he left Gibson and wanted to design something, you know, like they wanted him to design something for Fender that was a humbucker. And he actually did a good job at making it interesting, as opposed to just copying a PAF. He actually made something. It's almost, to me, it's almost like two big tele coils under a cover, and they split well.
Was he the one that designed the humbucker that has the three and the three?
Oh yeah, no, that's the wide range. That's the stuff that he did for Fender.
Yeah,
but he designed the original PAFs. He was the engineer on all that stuff.
Okay.
For Gibson, and then at some point Fender hired him. And I guess my theory of that is they wanted him to make a humbucker. You know, probably at that point, I think the patents had expired, so he could have probably just copied it. But he decided, you know, either on his own or directed by them to make something that was unique. It's still a humbucker, but it's unique.
The tone was different.
Yeah, it's a good pickup.
They're what Fender was looking at least from what I can interpret from the tone, is it had more output, but it's still... as much as possible with a humbucker, you still get that spank of the tele single coil.
Yeah. To me, it seems like how you would design a humbucker for Fender, you know, it makes sense.
Yeah.
But it's a good spec. Yeah. Those have become more popular in the past few years. I guess at the original release of them, they weren't that popular.
No.
It was only a few years, but now a lot of newer bands have caught onto them.
Well, a lot of guys put it, I mean, from the 60s, they were putting the other humbuckers on, like Albert Lee one of the first guys that put a regular Gibson humbucker.
Yeah, yeah.
So they were doing that already. Everybody was doing that. That's why I think Fender finally wised up. Looks like all these guys are modding their guitars.
Yeah.
Then the other, you have another one called the Ultratron.
Yeah. I get into Filtertrons as well, and that's my version of a Filtertron. I do several different versions of that. That one is, there's a standard Ultratron, which is a humbucker-sized Filtertron. So you could, anything that's got a humbucker ring or route, you could put that in there. Because classic Filtertrons are a different different width and size than a standard humbucker. So you'd have to either modify your guitar or you know, you'd have to modify your guitar usually to put it in if it's a non-Filtertron, mm-hmm. you know, like a non-Gretsch guitar. And then I also do the classic size ones, you know, I call it the Ultratron Vintage, which is the classic Filtertron spec, same size, so you could put it into any Gretsch. And then I started, you know, do variations of that, you know, modified versions that are somewhere between a Filtertron and a PAF, mm-hmm. you know, like there's sort of hybrids.
That's one thing, too, with the humbuckers. I remember one of the reasons why Eddie slanted the humbuckers, because the gap between the strings was different on a Fender.
Yeah.
The string position was different than on a Gibson. And you're saying it's different on the Gretsch. So do you make like the Ultratron for Fender spacing, Gibson spacing, Gretsch spacing?
No. Basically, it's on the Gretsch is the actual the classic Filtertrons were a different. The actual perimeter around the pickup was a different size, so you can't put it into a like a humbucker route and stuff. As far as that, the regular humbuckers, I do trem spaced or standard humbucker spaced. And in that case, when he put the humbucker in the bridge position of his guitar, the Fender spacing is a little bit wider, and he kind of angled it and stuff. And,
The filter in terms of the string spacing, is the Gretsch more like the Gibson in terms of the spacing of the poles, or is it more like the Fender?
It's more like the Gibson.
So do you make like a Fender one, for example, because a lot of guys now are putting Filtertrons on their Tellys.
What a lot of people do is they'll put like a good combination is a Telly bridge pickup and then a like a Filtertron in the neck. The thing about that is on Fender guitars, the wider spacing really only comes into play at the bridge. You can put a standard size Gibson humbucker in the neck of a Strat or a Tele, and the poles line up. Having said that, even a lot of great recordings have been done with a standard size humbucker right in the bridge of a Fender where the poles don't line up. But all the Van Halen stuff, those were not trem space. Trem space is something that's come out more, more recently.
Yeah, I remember when he came, it wasn't like you couldn't.
No, those recordings are done with a standard size humbucker in a trem spaced guitar, and it's not a problem as far as tone.
Well, we're almost out of time. I want to go through this guitar. This is one of the Universums. Let's go ahead and hold on. I'm going to mute for a second, and let me have that. Let me plug in. This is interesting. What Gary did for this guitar. And I want to talk a little about it because it's kind of like a cool little tip for you if you're going to put a pickup in. And this is set up. This is a DAG, which is made by Universum. And very nice guitars, by the way. And exclusive to the Bass Exchange. I'm going to let Gary explain what he did on this because this pickup isn't the standard Tele pickup, right?
Yes.
So, what did you?
One of the magic of Arcane. So he did a reproduction of original Fender 1950 pickup from the lap steel, which a lot of Telecaster players love that sound because it has like a more beefier sound, more stronger output, and that's what it is. It's pretty much set like a clone of 1950 lap steel guitar.
How much difference was there from the lap steel pickups from the standard guitar pickups?
The lap steel, like the early 50s stuff, like 51 and the stuff that was in the lap steel, those were Alnico 3 magnets compared to Alnico 5. Alnico 3 is a weaker magnet than Alnico 5. And, Tele bridge pickup, one of the great sounding pickups, and for some people, they find them to be too bright. Which one guy's, brightness and clarity might be another guy's like shrill, where it's going to hurt their ears. Mm-hmm. But basically when you do the Alnico 3 magnet, it tends to round off the highs some. And the stuff that was like in the lap steel, they used a finer gauge wire, and which has a higher DC resistance, more turns, and Alnico 3. So it's got the highs rounded off considerably, but it's still all Tele because it's still got the metal bass plate under it. So it still sounds like a Tele, but it never gets that shrill, kind of sharp, in your ice pick in your ear type of sound.
So it's got a nice sound. And that's the treble pickup there, so. It's a much fuller sound to me than the standard Tele spank, but it's got that tone to it.
Yeah, it's still all Tele, but it doesn't hurt you.
And then just so you can hear it, here's the bridge pickup or the neck pickup. 2 pickup. It's a really nice shimmer, glassy sound to it. Now, this pickup is just a standard type of... was there anything special that you did to this pickup?
Well, that one's also unique in that what generally people run into with tellies is some people find the bridge too bright and the neck too dark. Originally, they would have brass covers that were chrome-plated, and the neck pickup would probably be, you know, like the finer gauge wire, but overwound to probably like 8K.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, we did one with a nickel-silver cover, which is more transparent and nickel-plated, and then we used the more thicker gauge wire, which gives it a lower DC resistance, probably around 5.8K. So we wanted to basically make it more clear. And it's basically like a strat wind on a Tele neck pickup.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Tele bridge pickup and like a strat neck pickup is a great combination, but it looks funny if you just put a strat pickup inside the neck position.
So you're in like a strat one that fit in this... So it looked like
yeah, it's sort of like the specs of a Strat. It's Alnico 5 in the neck, so we basically wanted to make a clearer neck pickup and a warmer, fatter bridge pickup.
Mm-hmm. Now, real quick, what's this wood?
That's swamp ash, I think.
That's swamp ash swamp with ash.
This is a maple top.
Maple top, maple neck
body, and Wengay fretboard.
Okay.
With hollow neck and hollow body.
Okay. Oh, it's hollow, so it's hollow in there. The volume's down. It's got a nice... I like that combination of pickup. It's really nice. Tone. Well, I told you we'd run out of time. I just want to mention real quick, www.arcaneinc.com is the website for you.
Yes.
And www.baseexchange.com. And again, if you mention that you heard this show at the Bass Exchange at All About Guitar, you'll get a discount if you order or buy any of the pickups. And I'm sure you could nudge him for some other stuff. He's great at giving deals. Thank you, Gary. And also, too, Gary, you wanted to announce something, too, that I think is important about the you're making custom pedal boards?
Yes, we're making a lot of custom pedal boards. Right now it's a pedal board world. Everybody cannot live without pedal boards no more. And we're doing the custom pedal board with any pedal boards you have. Not specific one, but you can bring us pedal chain or another, some kind of boutique stuff. You can do the complete wire. We can do
so you can either rewire what you have or yes. Build from scratch.
Or build from scratch, yes. And I mean,
okay. Well, no, that's great. That's really I use pedal boards too. We have to. It's too many pedals nowadays. You just can't use one or two. It's got to be like five or six.
You need to do professional, especially touring guys who go on tour and relying on that. A lot of stuff built by themselves just fallen after a couple of shows. So.
Yeah.
Build them like a heavy-duty bulletproof stuff, so at least...
Yeah, we're seeing that now.
This whole tour, you know.
It's the only way to keep your tone consistent
right.
With the back line. So. But anyway, I want to thank both of you guys. Thank you, Gary, for introducing me to Rob. Rob, I'd love to have you come back on. We can go in even more depth than this, but this is very interesting. Doug, thanks for sitting in for us and playing the bass.
Of course.
Everybody... have a great week. We'll see you next week, and take care. And check out you can check online for check out all this stuff. There's some really interesting things, and we just touched the surface of what's going on and how much of a science it is to make the pickups now. It's really interesting what it's doing, but I think it's if you really want to focus on your sound, you need to take a look at it. Good night, everybody. Thank you very much.